Okay, so it's a pleasure to give this talk. I'm going to talk about some work in progress with my students. So so I'm going to be Esli Pomoni and Abhijit. Got that. And you will see that still work in progress. We don't understand everything, but I think there's already a story which seems to be emerging, which I thought would be worth telling you. So so it's been more than 10 years of ADS-CFT, and ADS-CFT has come to dominate all of theoretical physics, it seems. I'm not kidding, it's true. And of course, there is the paradigmatic example of N equal 4 of Mills and its cousins. So one, if you survey all this, the work has been done in the last 11 years, I think the fair assessment is that, of course, we by now understand rather well the paradigmatic N equal 4 case, and it's actually still very fruitful to study it in detail. We learn things every new things every month. And there are many extensions of the basic correspondence, but they all seem to fall more or less in the same universality class, although in a reason that I'm going to explain, in a way that I'm going to explain. So first of all, the example that we really understand, of course, you can always take a more phenomenological viewpoint and start modeling QCD with some five-dimensional gravity, but the case that over we really have control, over which we really have control, all share several features. First of all, they all have they have a field content which is limited to adjoint or more generally bifundamental matter, and this is neatly encoded by drawing quiver diagrams. And a related viewpoint, of course, the geometric origin of this fact is that the duality we really understand are motivated by considering the three brains at certain local singularities in 10D critical string theory. So, of course, the open string matter content you can get from the decoupling of D3 brains is limited to representation, matter representations of this kind. And supersymmetry can be broken but in all the examples that we really understand, it is implicitly there. So in particular, the extra six-dimensional scalars that tell us geometrically that the D3 brain are embedded in the critical 10-dimensional space are more or less there, if in somewhat disguised form, because you can do various orbifolds of the formation procedure, but the extra matter is more or less always there. So, of course, it's possible, and there's been a large industry in this direction, to really go to theories that have generally fewer degrees of freedom. And so it's possible to consider the formation such that in the infrared we get really fewer degrees of freedom, and the most radical way of doing this, of course, is give a mass to all the fields except for the gauge fields of N equals to 4, and the infrared are supposed to get the pure glue theory. But every time you attempt to play such a game, you inevitably run into some kind of strong coupling singularity on the dual side. So there are, but now there is a whole zoo of such examples. You could consider the Witten's original way to get pure QCD by taking D4 brains and break supersymmetry with the supersymmetry breaking boundary condition on a circle. You consider the Polchinski-Strass deformation, and the general lesson you learn is that if you're interested in the regime of the theory in the infrared, below which the unwanted degrees of freedom decouple, on the dual side, you run into, at the very best, a high curvature singularity, a high curvature background. The string couple need not be large, but the curvature will be large.
If you run into high curvature problems, even in the n equals 4 case, you try to do it by a couple
of cases. That's right, yeah. So here I'm assuming, right. I'm going to elaborate.
You don't have to go to these complicated, more complicated theories.
Right.
See, the issue is that you can't do coupling of order one.
That's right. But by now we have a whole powerful set of tools that seem to point towards a, maybe to say exact solution is saying too much, but towards a large control, or at least of the planar limit of n equals to 4. So the theory seems to have enough structure that if you just want to consider the planar limit, which is, then even curvature of order string scale, well, we're not still there, but there are people who make great contribution in this audience, and now there are exact interpolating functions, for example, for certain quantities between weak and strong coupling, which are based on a variety of consistency checks. They are not really proven, but they seem to be really true, that really seem to tell us that someday we'll be able to completely solve planar n equals to 4.
Well, if that day comes, then you'll be able to make some progress with these other theories.
Not necessarily. It's not clear. It's not clear to me whether this solvability property is specific to n equals to 4 or how generic it is. In fact, that's one of the questions that I would like to answer, and we will see the direction.
Another way of saying, yes. One of the real problems, at least if you're interested, I'm not sure what you're potentially interested in,
yes,
is D or n equals 1, so what's behind you.
Well, eventually, of course, we would like to do QCD, but we do one step at a time.
Well, the one point is that you'd like to really separate the confinement scale and the dynamical scale of confinement symmetry.
That's right. That's right.
That's what's really important.
That's right. So this is what I was summarizing in by this. I wasn't really explaining this, but that's exactly what happens. We now have a whole zoo of examples where we can indeed get in the extreme low energy limit. You get QCD, but as soon as you probe the dynamical scale of the confinement scale, the dynamical scale, you get a whole set of new degrees of freedom, and it's impossible to really have a hierarchy of scale between these two. Okay, so as I was mentioning a moment ago, we now have a whole new set of tools that have been developed in the constant of equals to 4. Integrable structures on both sides, the gravity side and or the sigma model side and the field theory side, spin chains, etc. And we may try to revisit this problem and try to see whether we can get theory which have generally fewer degrees of freedom and how much control we can get on them. So there is, in fact, a rather quantitative way to phrase this issue of being in the same universality class of n equals to 4, which is to consider these A and C anomaly coefficients. So probably this is very familiar to a large portion of the audience, but let me mention, in four dimensions, if you consider the theory coupled to an external gravitational background, so the stress energy tensor vanishes, of course, in the absence of the gravitational background because, I'm considering conformal field theory. Okay, so consider conformal field theory in four dimensions and couple it to an external gravitational background. Then, in four dimensions, it turns out that there are two anomaly structures which have this form. Well, there is a certain combination of curvature invariants. You really don't want to know exactly, but that's what they are. And it turns out that for n equals to 4, A exactly equal to C, and all the theories that for which we really have analytic control, in a DSFT share this property, precisely because the extra degrees of freedom are never really decoupled. Okay? So, in fact, there appears to be some kind of no-go theorem that has been discussed that says that, in fact, any theory you're ever going to realize holographically through some kind of weakly coupled supergravity description will have to have this property. And if that's the case, well, that's a serious limitation on the kind of things we can describe holographically. Because, for sure, the generic conformal field in four dimension does not have this property.
It's a classical statement, right?
Sorry?
It's a classical statement, right? On the gravity side.
Yes, okay. On the gravity side, there's a famous calculation of Hendrik and Skenderis that if you believe there is a weakly coupled gravity description so that you can ignore higher curvature correction and use the Einstein-Hilbert action, so if the higher curvature correction, which will be of the order of the radius of your compactification in string units, are negligible, then you inevitably learn that A is equal to C. Okay, so there are a variety of ways in which you could imagine relaxing this condition, but you have to be very careful because anomalies are a tricky thing. So, since this is something which is really independent of any marginal parameter of your field theory, you don't want to compute something on the gravity side that would depend on some parameter you can vary of your compactification. So it has to be the whatever corrections you had on the gravity side that made A equal to A different from C have to be robust. You don't want to get an answer which depends on some modulus. That would violate the fact that these are sort of topological in nature. So okay, so we will see in the end whether this is a real limitation, but it's certainly something that has that one should always keep in the back of one's mind. There is a serious issue here that if you have some kind of weakly coupled gravitational description based on the Einstein-Hilbert action, you will automatically get A equal to C. Okay, so this is sort of my general introduction. So
are there some examples where there are different than finite then, but are
yes, that's right. So since in appropriate units there's an n square in front of this action, this is really a classical calculation, so it's very large n, and there are indeed examples where you can get a subleading correction to the CAA, and they have been, in some cases, successfully matched. Okay, so the proposal, so the challenge that I'd like to pose, and it's certainly not the first time this challenge is posed, is to consider what, in some sense, is the next best case. So n equal to 4 has this wonderful PS224 symmetry. Its cousins inherit some kind of solvability property from being deformation, rather simple deformation n equal to 4. And in some sense, the case which is sort of next in the list of universality classes, finite n equal, so the simplest example of a conformal n equal to 2 theory, which is finite n equal to 2 superior mills with gauge group SUN. And if you want to make it finite, you take the number of hypermultiplets. So to be 2nc, and you take them in the fundamental representation. Of course, n equal to 2 prior mills with one adjoint hypermulti is, n equal to 2 with one adjoint hypermulti is the same as n equal to 4, but if you take fundamental matter, the one loop beta function turns out to be, exact up to instanton correction. In fact, for n equal to 2c, one can argue that it's exact to the order, and the beta function is slightly zero. So this is a very interesting case for several reasons. And the first in this context is the fact that one can still define a tough coupling, or maybe I should call it a tough Veneziano coupling, G square n, which is a exactly marginal deformation. So here, of course, one is considering now, if you want to somehow discuss some kind of Lagrangian limit here, you have no choice but to consider the limit in which the number of flavors increases together with the number of floor, keeping the ratio fixed. So we consider the nc going to infinity with nf over nc fixed. And in fact, in this case, we just take it to be equal to 2. And with the combination lambda g square n fixed. This is also known as the Veneziano limit. Sorry? Are in the fundamental. That's right. Okay. So this theory is genuinely in a different universality class from n equals to 4. In particular, A is different from C. Large n, and I could even tell you how much it is if you care. But anyway, A is different from C large n. Okay. But of course, there is a exactly marginal parameter in the game. So for one thing, we have at our disposal all the tools of perturbation theory. We can systematically compute loop by loop. And for large lambda, we should feel entitled to some kind of simplification. Perhaps there is indeed some kind of simple description based on some kind of holographic dual. And this is really a long-standing problem to say what one can about this specific theory. And in fact, the moment you start thinking along these lines, sort of a natural speculation surfaces to mind, and which is the fact that theories which have genuinely fewer degrees of freedom should really be associated with non-critical strings. So the general hierarchy that one expects, sort of natural speculation, is that, of course, n equals to 4 is 10d that we have learned. N equals to 0 is 5d, as Polyakov said many years ago. And that's how you naturally fill this table. Okay? So I think there has been some discussion of the n equals 1 six-dimensional case. In fact, many papers, one in particular by Kleber and Maldacena, had some proposal to describe super QCD in terms of a six-dimensional theory, but this is the case you should discuss first because you have more symmetry, and because unlike this case of theories in, for example, in the superconformal window of Seiberg, here you really have an exactly marginal parameter, which supposes is going to give you a lot more analytic control. Yes.
I mean, some of these D3 rings are local singularities, n equals
1. Absolutely. But that's, in some sense, a fake n equals 1. So you can easily engineer theories which have n equals 1, and you know, you draw me some quiver, or orbifolds are the simplest way, but they really are n equals 4 in disguise. You have made some deformation, some twist, some... You haven't really got rid of the extra 6 scale. Yeah. Okay, so that's a challenge. What can we say about this very interesting case, which of course, you know, the problem has been open for many years. But the main point is that, given all the toolbox that we have sharpened with n equals to 4 now, maybe some of the same tools can help us understand this theory. In particular, there is no excuse for not starting systematic perturbative exploration of this theory, about which surprisingly very little is known. You can take a couple of other students and start computing one loop, two loops, anomalous dimensions, and see what you learn. And see in particular if the same kind of structure have emerged for n equals to 4 are present in this theory, which generally has fewer degrees of freedom. And let me remind you, in the case of n equals to 4, of course, everything is in this case is really fixed by symmetry. So the moment you know the conformal symmetry and the arc symmetry, you could, with a lot of hindsight, of course, you could guess that the dual geometry is S5 cross S5. But there is actually a more physical way, based on this idea of interpreting the dilation operator of the theory as the Hamiltonian of a spin chain. So remember that story. One views the closed string, the dual closed string in some discretized. So this is an old idea. That was a beautiful paper by BMN and by David and collaborators, where they made the first significant progress in that direction. You view you consider a single trace operator in n equals to 4, where you stick any of the fields of n equals to 4. So in particular, you could take some scalars or whatnot. And you view this as a spin chain, where at each side you have a Hilbert space, which in this case would span the full set of states you can have in the PS224 multiplet, and you view the dilation operator as a Hamiltonian, which by usual large N factorization turns out to be local. So at large N, you get the leading order in perturbation theory, you just get a Hamiltonian which is nearest neighbor, and then the locality of the chain, so the chain becomes more and more delocalized as you increase the order of perturbation theory. And this kind of approach can certainly now be applied to our theory and see what we can learn. Now, in this case, if you carry through some simple compilation in one loop, you realize that the spin chain emits some sort of Magnon excitation, which have zero gap. There are some Malse excitation on the chain, and that tells you that there is a sense in which you can take the continuum limit, and taking the continuum limit of the discretized spin chain, you get some sigma model description, which turns out, in fact, to coincide with the S5 times S5 sigma model. So in some sense, that's sort of a more physical way in which you can understand this emergent geometry from the weak coupled theory. And then basically the program is do the same now for any conformal theory for the dimensions you want, but this is sort of the starting point because it's sort of the most basic and the simplest.
Yeah, but you don't have to take a continuum limit. I mean, that's a mystery here. The sigma model apparently also describes a spin chain of lengths 2.
Yes, I agree. But you do get some insight about the continuum geometry if you consider these states with lots of quantum numbers. Yeah, I'm not saying this is understood, or I completely agree, of course. The sigma model also knows about short operators, but if you restrict to the class to long operators with high quantum numbers, then there really is a very direct way to make the comparison. Right. Okay, anyway, I'm saying too many words, so let's... So the first issue that needs to be addressed before we do this calculation is the fact that now we are taking a limit which is really different from Toff's limit of large number of colors. We're taking the number of colors and the number of flavors to be large at the same time. So we need to, I need to spend some words on what I really mean by spin chain. Okay, so generically, if my theory now has, so that is sort of some item I could open here, which, yes?
So you have a theory with SU2R symmetry?
This particular theory, in fact, has SU2R times U1R arc symmetry. Yeah, so you could make a guess, right? You could guess that this is the dual. But I think this is wrong. It's a natural guess, but it doesn't seem to pass some basic tests. Also, somehow, the moment you consider an eight-dimensional critical background, you need to somehow Okay, actually, I can't really say this is wrong, but for sure, some part of the geometry needs to be highly curved, because you need to somehow soak up the anomaly. You are in eight dimensions, and you kind of expect the entire geometry to be large. Sorry. So there is a large cosmological constant. The moment you start doing an eight-dimensional non-critical theory, there's going to be a large cosmological constant, and so you need to soak it up by either some kind of linear dilaton or some stringy size geometry. Okay, so we could sort of now discuss this more general issue of sort of the Veneziano limit, and
can I ask some very nice question? So this n equal to AD, is it impossible to realize some brain with angular?
Yes, there are well-known brain constructions, and some of them will be used.
If you take the back reaction of that is, brain, orthogonal brain, then by back reaction you can immediately get what is the dimension you are describing. Is that wrong?
I would agree with what you say, except for the word immediately. I agree with what you said, except for the word immediately.
Okay.
It doesn't seem easy. I mean, at least we didn't think it was easy, and some people have thought about this before. But yes, of course, string theory gives you many, many tools, and you can now use brain constructions and apply the back reaction and see. Okay, before we get into that, so sort of we are sort of in the bottom-up viewpoint now, and then we will get to top-down. On the bottom-up, you're given this beautiful Lagrangian, and you can start computing perturbative diagram and see what you can learn. In fact, in some sense, I phrase this program in terms of holography, but you need not think about it that way. Now, we have learned that n equals 4 has some beautiful integrable structures. How generic are they? Do they extend to the sort of the next simplest case, which should be n equal to 2, or not? So you could also, if you don't care about holography, you could just simply phrase the question in terms of how much of the structure n equal to 4 generalized to this case, which has also a weak couple expansion. Okay, so I'm going to have fields of two kinds, adjoint fields, where A and B are color indices, and fundamental fields, which now carry a color index and a flavor index. And then, of course, my double line diagrams will be of, I now have two kinds of propagators, as Veneziano taught us a long time ago. And I can repeat pretty much Toft's argument about the Lagrangian limit. And now a generic Feynman diagram will look like a Riemann surface of a certain genus given by somehow a triangulation with blue lines. I don't know if I can really do it justice on the blackboard. And then sprinkled on the surface, there will be loops of flavors. Okay? And in the usual Toft limit, of course, every time you open such a loop, if I were to do this in a theory where the number of flavors is much more than the number of color, every red loop would cost a factor of 1 over n, but of course, now this is not the case anymore because the number of flavor is also large and large and limited. But either than that, it's still the case, so I'm just making an obvious point, that this Riemann surface can be classified with its genus, and it will go like n minus 2g, where now n is simultaneously the number of color and the number of flavor. Okay, so I'm not saying anything particularly surprising. This has been known for 30 years or more. So from the string theory viewpoint, what this means is that if you want to hope to achieve a dual description, you must resum open string perturbation theory. On the dual side, this is a standard crossing diagram. Each of these red insertion is a hole on the worksheet. And now what we are saying is that you need to really sum over all the possible ways you can insert these red loops and resum open string perturbation theory. So from the field theory viewpoint, what this means is that if you now want to diagonalize the Hamiltonian, play a similar game as here, where in my present notation this would be phi to the L, each of these guy would be in a joint field. Now this is not enough, because to leading order, this object will now mix with an object which is a which in the previous language I would have interpreted as an open chain, but now where the flavor indices are contracted to form a flavored singlet. So now what in the previous language I was calling closed strings and open strings, provided of course I consider the flavor contraction now mix a leading order, and in computing the one loop Hamiltonian or the all loop Hamiltonians in this Pfaff planar limit, you must disentangle this mix. So this trace is a color trace. Maybe I don't know if I'm being clear. So this is A1, B1, B1, well, A1, A2, A2, A3, all the way to AN, A1. That's my color trace. And in this case, I would contract. I'm sorry, I didn't
understand.
Oh, of course, you can keep going, right? This is the simplest case. So now you can, is that what you mean? So now you can have all sorts of complicated structures where effectively the QQ bar, so in other terms, the way this should be really phrased, I can form a mesonic composite MAB, which is Q bar with a flavor contraction. Now my chain will involve phi type objects and M type objects. Okay, so from the field theory, this is kind of obvious. From what's interesting is that from the usual way we think about holographic dual, this now means that closed strings mix with flavor contracted open strings, and the way we should interpret that is that now the, you know, of course there is a well-known way in which you can add fundamental matter, but that is usually done in the probe approximation, which means that the number of flavor is much smaller than the number of colors, so there is a small back reaction, and then of course this mixing of order one means instead that the flavor domain will have a large back reaction in the geometry, and so you will have a new effective closed string, which will be a rearrangement of the degrees of freedom, where the usual closed string mixes with the open strings and probes a different type of geometry. So that's the name of the game, if we can understand this dual geometry by studying this kind of chains in the weak coupling. Okay. So let me tell you the answer. So we calculated the one loop Hamiltonian in the scalar set of this theory. Unfortunately, it doesn't look particularly pretty, but it could. What?
These are the same operators that you have in N equals 1 in supercuticity with flavors, so like putters of human fiber.
Yes, of course, sure. Except that in that case, there is no weakly coupled expansion, mm-hmm. because you are sitting at a
Yeah, but would you
coupling
say
is of order one.
Would you say that net theory is like n equals one but fake, n equals two in the same way in which the other ones are?
No, I don't think so, because to get to that theory you need to integrate out the adjoint.
But if you keep the adjoint, yeah.
If you keep the adjoint, then in some sense that theory is fake n equal to two, yes. Okay, so we did this exercise of calculating the, basically repeating the Minahan-Zarembo paper. In this case, things are a little bit more complicated because there are a lot more diagrams to compute, but it's straightforward. Perturbation theory. So let's introduce a little bit of notation. In this theory, we have the scalars of the theories are this. So there is a. So maybe I should before. I mean, I must. Of course, everybody knows this very well. But let me just remind you. So the field content of this theory, there is a vector hypermultiplet. Vector multiplet is n equals two vector multiplet, which has a scalar two lambdas. So I goes from one to two. And a gauge field, and then there are hypermultiplets, which consists of this qi and psi tilde, where in a more or the qi's again goes from one to two, and if you can think of them as q and q tilde star, where in another way of thinking about it, qm psi and q tilde m psi tilde are two n equals to one scalar multiplets. Chiral multiplets. Okay? And of course, these objects are in the adjoint, and these objects are in the fundamental and carry flavor indices. So each of these objects would carry an index structure AI, whereas this type of object will carry index structure AB. Okay? So the scalar set of the theory consists of this kind of fundamental object. Is there any doubt or question?
Scalar?
Sorry? The vector model contains a complex scalar phi. No. Well, if you like, 2SU2 is the same as...
No, it's a singlet of SU2.
I mean, the three... Okay, I'm sorry. This is a SU2 singlet, and it's charged under... So maybe I should draw a little... Okay, this I index is SU2R index. So objects that have an I index are doublets of SU2. And then phi has plus one U1R charge, and the Qs are neutral. Okay, so you can now form this... this mesonic combination, and in fact you can do that either a single combination, which is q I q bar I with open color indices, or you can form of course a triplet combination, which is the same, but now you take these indices opening, subtract the trace. Okay? So the generic chain will now be of the form a bunch of phis, a bunch of m's, a bunch of phi bars, sprinkled in all possible ways, where there are, in some sense, two types of phi. You can have I can have either a phi or a phi bar, and four types of m, because you have a single which is real, or a triplet, which is also real, but in different representation of SU2R. Okay? So let me tell you the answer. Fortunately, there really isn't an elegant way to write the answer. But maybe I should have said this before, but it's still the case that in this Veneziano limit, you get a notion of planarity of the chain. That's very crucial for us, of course, so otherwise we couldn't even get started. It's still the case that at higher and higher order in planar perturbation theory, the interaction become more and more delocalized, but to leading order at one loop, it's just the nearest neighbor interaction. And so the nearest neighbor Hamiltonian takes the following form. So let me write it in this way. So let me write and then explain what it is. So there is a lambda over 16 pi squared, and then there is a 2 plus k minus 2p. There's a square root of an f over nc k, 0, 0, 4 minus 2k. Square root of an f over nc k 0, 0, 8 minus 2k, where this k operator, so let me write it in this fashion. Some of you, those of you who are familiar with this thing, will recognize these symbols. The k operator is this, the permutation operator is this, and p and q go from 1 to 2, and it's phi 1 is just phi, and phi 2 is phi bar. And these I and j indices are SU2 indices. And well, that's the answer. So, sorry? Excuse me? Okay, that is an extremely good question, and we don't know yet. It's a little bit embarrassing that I have to give you this answer. But this is not a garden variety spin chain for several reasons, because for one thing, the structure of the chain is a little unusual in the following sense, that each of these vector spaces, as I said, can be a phi bar, or a q, but to begin with, there is a constraint. You cannot sprinkle them arbitrarily because the Flavor indices need to be contracted. So after a Q, you must have a Q bar. So there is some kind of funny projection on the state space. And you could attempt to rewrite the chain as we did by using the m's as your fundamental variable, so to say that the space of states is really comprised by phi bars and m's. But then you run into the ugliness that then the number of sides of the chain is not conserved by the interactions. So we showed this to our colleagues on integral modeling. They couldn't recognize this as a known model. But of course, there is a series of obvious tests that must be done we haven't done yet. The first one is to completely solve the two-body scattering problem. Okay, so what we did, which was a simple exercise, you can calculate the single Mannon excitations of the chain, and you discovered something which is rather interesting. There is a lowest lying excitation which has a gap, the gap of the lowest excitation is is this. So for an f smaller than 2nc, it's a completely massive chain that wouldn't have a continuum limit. So there is a gap. And the chain becomes gapless precisely when an f equal to 2nc, giving some hope that you may be able to take some kind of continuum limit and see some kind of effective geometry, at least for high spin operators. But the real test that needs to be done, of course, is to now compute the scattering asymmetrics of, first of all, two magnets, which should be a Sephora Reserve size, and then see a priori the one for three magnets and see whether it factorizes. That we have not done. Okay, so this is so that's one avenue we're pursuing, trying to milk some information out of this chain, and we don't know yet whether it's integrable, but there is sort of a first indication that something nice is happening. At an f equal to 2nc, there is the gap is going to zero. The other thing that you can do, which...
the gap will go to zero means anomalous connection zero. Some
yes.
Extra BPS protection.
That's right. There is some extra BPS protection. So there is the state which is protected in the limit is phi bar minus M1 in this phi C. So something I didn't see, but it's maybe it was sort of obvious to everybody, is that there is a vacuum where you only, with the unexcited state, the vacuum is the one where you only phi's. And, excuse me?
That you want our charge.
For
sure. Yeah.
That's right. Absolutely. You knew that before. And now you discover that there is some sort of funny excitation which makes it order one, the phi bar, with the squarks. That can now propagate along the chain with zero gap. So in pure n equals to 2, if you know this would be sublid, so you can diagonalize this exactly for every NF, and then the lowest excitation would be something of NF over 2nc here, but the gap would not be zero. There would be an excitation of this kind, which should be massive, and it's only going to zero in the limit. Okay, so that's one avenue you can pursue, but there's sort of another more obvious thing you can now do, which is to simply list the set of protected states, LRGen, which is also another easy exercise that, however, it's a little bit more saldo than in the case of n equals to 4. So in the case of n equals to 4, let me remind you. So for n equals to 4, the single trace protected states are the familiar guys where you have this sort of SO6 symmetric traceless combination of the six scalars. Okay. Things start to become rather sad when you consider multi-trace operators, because then you have the whole complication of n equal 4 representation theory really starts when you consider multi-trace operator. But the level of single trace operator, it's a very simple answer. These are the only potential states, and they are 1/2 BPS. In this case, things are a little bit more intricate, because n equal to 2 supersymmetry makes your multiples shorter. So in particular, in this case, as you know, the lowest I trace XI XJ has a multiple that further up contains the stress energy tensor. In n equal to 2 supersymmetry, that's not the case. So you may think that by analogy, well, trace phi would be identical to 0 for SUN. The simplest thing would be trace phi squared. But in fact, the multiple with trace phi squared does not contain the stress energy tensor. So you know from the get-go that you have a more intricate representation theoretic problem to solve. You need extra stuff. And so the claim is that... Sure, but even if you include the matter multiplet, it's the case that what I'm saying is that the multiplet that starts with trace 5 squared, it's a short multiplet equal to 2, but it's too short. It does not contain the stress. It does not go all the way up to the stress tensor. So you know that, so in other terms, trace phi to the k is a natural class of chiral operators, but that cannot be possibly the, that cannot possibly be the end of the final answer, because you're missing the best, you're missing the essential, one essential guy, which is the stress tensor. So after some thinking, so first of all, from the explicit Hamiltonian that we have, you can just compute, you can just make a list of the candidates for protection, because you can list all the scalar operator and see which ones have zero normal dimension, and then you can try to improve on that answer. But the first, the first thing you do, sort of a list of protected states, the one loop, and that's what you learn, where this T is this combination I had before. And then, surprisingly, trace M3, which is Q bar Q in the triplet combination, is also protected. Okay. So this is the complete list of operators which are protected in one loop, and in fact, we believe, using superconformal representation theory, one can refine the argument a little, and we actually believe this is the complete list to all loops. For this first class of operators, you can make a very sharp argument based on a tabulation of multiple done by Dollar and Osborne. So one thing you have to watch out for in generically in life is that short multiplets can be sneaky and recombine with other short multiplets to form long multiplets. But it turns out that if you look at the list of how a long multiplet can decompose into shorter ones, on the right-hand side, you never find multiplets of this kind. So these guys are for sure protected. They can never recombine with other multiplet to form a long multiplet. These guys, on the other hand, could potentially recombine with the other short or semi-short multiple for a longer multiple, but it turns out that the extra stuff which is needed for them to combine is actually not there with coupling. So they're also protected. And finally, this guy is also protected. Okay, so you look at this list, and something very striking is going on. Clearly, the dual geometry has a large circle, because you see that your multiplets are organizing themselves into a Kaluza-Klein tower. So this is the hint for a Kaluza-Klein tower from an S1. And the other rather important piece of information you get from this is that, on the other hand, there seems to be no large two-sphere in the game, because there are no protected states with large SU2 quantum numbers. And that is something you can sort of really check rather easily, because the only way you could possibly get a protected... Oh, two circles? Oh, well, I don't know. Yeah, I have two sets of them, but they're charged under the same U1.
You can only spin 5 bars in the same thing without changing the dimension.
So, okay, so I don't, these things are not, the game here, you play a field theory game and attempt to get clues, trying to make reasonable assumptions. So, so it turns out, in fact, so if you think about it from representation theory, you can look at the unitarity bound of a long multiple. A long multiple has a dimension greater or equal than where this is sort of Lorentz, and then this is the SU2R, and this is the U1R. And so if you want to have states which have any, okay, and then of course, what am I trying to say? If you want to have any kind of protection, you must be either saturating this unitarity bound, or in some cases even there is a sort of lower unitarity bound that you can also saturate, which is of this form, for multiple which are really are killed by some supercharges. And you see, so the only way you can really get an object which large are charged is by stringing together several Qs. There's really no other way, because that's the only efficient way in which you can increase the R charge. This is object with classical dimension 2 and R equal to 2, so that's the only way that you can get this with coefficient 1, by stringing together two Qs. You will not be able to do this with lambdas, because I could get R equal to 2 here with two lambdas, but that would make it delta equal to 3 here. So, and then the simple exercise we did with the one loop speed chain is already sufficient to see that such object will necessarily have non-zero anomalous dimension from nearest stable interactions. So you know a priori that no such objects can exist just from the one loop calculation. Okay, so to proceed. One can get more insight by realizing that, after all, n equal 4 is the mother of everything. And there is, after all, a way to get this theory as a certain deformation of n equal to 4, but in some sense, I said this at the beginning, you can always get theory with generally fewer degrees of freedom of n equal to 4 if you are prepared to do rather violent things. And so the way to obtain this theory is rather interesting. You start from n equals to 4 and perform as U2R before. So let me explain how that goes. So we write the... first let me say something of the following nature. Let me write the 6 scalars of n equals to 4 as a self-dual antisymmetric tensor of SU4. So that's 4 times 3 divided by 2 will be equal to 6. And let me parameterize this 4x4 matrix in the following way. I'm going to put z here, minus z here, z bar here, minus z bar here, and these off diagonal elements, which are 2x2, I'm going to call I hat I. And what I have in mind, I've taken the SU4 R symmetry of n equals to 4 and decompose it into block diagonal SU2 left times SU2 right, so that this index I from 1 to 2 is the right index, and this index I hat again from 1 to 2 is the left index. And this is a way to make manifest how the scalars of n equals to 4 transform under these SU2 left times SU2 right subgroup of SU4 R symmetry. And then the Z2R that we do is the standard one, has been discussed by many people, that preserve n equals to 2 supersymmetry. So this is a n equals to 2, which is an orbifold by the -1, -1 element that sits in the SU2 left. Okay? This means the following. I've told you so far about the R symmetry structure of the n equal to 4 fields. And now let me instead write the color structure I start with SU 2n superior Mills and write the fields in a block diagonal way in color space. This is now color space. And what this, the prescription to do this to all before is the following. For the field Z, which, as you see, does not transform under this element of SU to left, maybe under, never mind. These are SU4 indices, so the fact that they are anti-symmetric means that under the SU2 left action, this guy gets this object twice. So an object like Z, which is invariant under the Z2, the prescription is we throw away the off-diagonal terms in color space. Whereas an object like I, which picks a minus one under the orbital action, we throw away the diagonal terms. And we call them Q, I hat I. And, well, here you have no choice because it's forced upon you by the structure of the matrix that this should have to be a Q bar I hat. Oh my god. Never mind. I'm probably giving too much detail anyway. But anyway, this is epsilon epsilon Q bar, and this is Q I hat I. Okay, so similarly for the fermions, you play a similar game. The fermions are start off as four fermions of SU4. The first two are charged under the SU2 left, and the second two are charged under the SU2 right. The one that are charged under the SU2 left, you pick the block diagonal part. And the one that are charged under the SU2 right, so they are invariant under the action of the orbital, you actually pick the diagonal part. And by abuse notation, I call this guy with the same name. And finally, for the gauge field, being an object which is invariant under the orbital, you can only pick the diagonal part in color space. Okay, so this is the standard Z2R before n equals to 4, and now the color group is now modulo sum U1 you have to throw away, but anyway, it's SUN times SUN, and there are objects which are in the fundamental of either SUN, and objects which are instead in the bifundamental of this SUN times SUN. Okay? So now we have a theory which is n equals to 2 theory, which has two vector multiplets, which are phi lambda I a mu and phi hat lambda hat I a mu hat, and then it has these hyperts which are given by this x, this q I hat and psi. Okay, so this theory is very similar to the theory we want to study in the following sense. These two gauge groups have at the orbital point the same gauge coupling G. And now we're going to play the following game. We consider the formation of the theory when we give two different gauge couplings to the two gauge group and do the rather violent thing of sending the second gauge coupling to zero. In that limit, this second SUN becomes interpreted as a flavor symmetry becomes a global symmetry. And then the claim is that we precisely get the theory that we want, with plus some extra decoupled n equals to 2 by it. Okay?
I thought n, f was z over 2.
Yes, and the way that comes about is because our objects, which are in the fundamental of the second group, also carry an extra index I hat, which I remind you is an SU to left index. So SU to left is just a global symmetry from this viewpoint, and then the SU in the limit at G2 goes to zero. It's easy to check that the Lagrangian, which for arbitrary G2 is invariant under SU to left times SU n global, let me call it this way, the symmetry gets enhanced to a SU to n global. Okay, I don't know if I was... This is sort of a standard construction, and I don't know if I explained it very well, but let me summarize it. You start from n equal to 4 square means, perform a certain Z2 projection. That gives you a theory which has two gauge groups, both SUN, which at the orbifold point have the same gauge coupling, but it turns out that the beta function is in fact exactly zero for arbitrary value of the two gauge coupling, so this, and it's an exactly marginal deformation to vary them arbitrarily. And in the limit in which you switch off the second gauge coupling, you get a theory that has the same field content of the one that we want to study, provided one makes this reinterpretation of the indices, which is just a relabeling, of enhancing this SUN global symmetry times this SU2 left index that was there from the start to an SU2N global symmetry. Okay? All right, so... So here is a second set of games that now you can study. The theory at the orbifold point can be studied using the beautiful tools of n equals to 4. It's a simple truncation of n equals to 4. And in fact, people have written at least a one loop and asymptotic beta answers for the theory. And now the question to which I don't know the answer to, but it's something that integrability people should know rather easily, is what happens to the beautiful integrable structure n equals to 4 as you change the second gauge coupling. And if you... Sorry?
It should get destroyed.
It should get destroyed?
Yeah. Integrability is rather final. Pretty much anything destroys it.
Okay, that would be sad, but but it's certainly something that one can see. And you can now... Okay, so there is another game that we played, and actually, how much time do I have?
This is a marginal differential exam.
Yes.
So, I mean, sometimes it's destroyed, but not completely. Right, there are these.
Yeah, you could hope. There are two things you can. Well, okay, maybe it's destroyed, that's too bad. Or you could hope that some subset of the theory has still some symmetry, or maybe you could hope that this whole way of getting from the orbifold is the wrong way, and maybe in the limit G2 going to zero, something beautiful happens again. I don't know. Anyway, so another game that you can now play, which is rather interesting, is to see how the protected multiplets are matched between the orbifold theory and the final theory. And the protected multiplets I listed before were all flavored singlets, so we should focus in particular on objects in the original theory which are SU to left singlets. And let me give you a simple summary of the story. The protected multiplets of the Z2 orbifold really come into two classes. There are the untwisted states, which are easily obtained by taking the familiar trace x to the k protective states of n equal to 4 and projecting them on T1 that are invariant under the Z2 action. And then there are twisted states, which are sort of new, and they are obtained by adding the twist matrix tau, which is sort of in color space, will be the identity minus the identity in this 2n by 2n space. And so one can see how things match, and they match rather nicely if you focus on the SU2 left sector. And again, one has to rely on a little bit of representation theory by making sure that short multiples cannot combine into long ones. And rather interestingly, the twisted states, so let me make a list, they are trace phi to the L minus trace phi hat to the L, and one single lonely guy, which is xi I hat times tau xj j hat contracted into a SU2 left singlet combination, which makes it as SU2R triplet. And on the other hand, the untwisted states, if you focus on the SU2 left singlets, again, are instead, let me write it this way, trace T phi to the L plus trace T hat phi hat to the L, and again trace phi to the L plus trace phi hat to the L. So up to a overcounting to the fact that we have this extra decoupled stuff as G2 goes to zero, these are precisely the states that we have found in the other theory by explicit one-loop anomalous dimension. Now, basically, I have, I can do either of two things. I can summarize. So this discussion so far has been in the gauge theory side, and there is a whole long discussion about the gravity side, which I can summarize in 5 minutes, or I don't know. It's probably worth doing. Okay, so so what can you do on the gravity side? What you can do on the gravity side is start from the well-known description of the orbifold as it is 5 cross S5 mod Z2 and try to follow the deformation. This deformation is rather subtle because it corresponds to the following thing. The transverse space probed by the D3 brains is R2 times R4 mod Z2. And R4 mod Z2 is this LE space which has a collapse to sphere. And it's well known that from the signal model viewpoint, the B field to this collapse S2 is not zero, but at the orbifold point is equal to some finite value 1/2. So changing the relative couplings between the two gauge group is this rather subtle thing of changing the, well, divided by 2, I guess, changing the value of the B field through the collapse cycle. So in the limit in which G2 goes to zero, this B field goes to zero, and this is well known to lead to a strong coupling problem. So this is the famous type of strong coupling singularity encounter, you know, when in type 2 when you get extra gauge states from wrapping brains, etc. And so this description is not a good description. You cannot use this description to make progress towards a gravity dual. And this has been noticed before by many people, and that does not mean we don't have a good description. And the good description is obtained by going to type 2A instead and realizing the same theory as an Hanani-Witten setup. So by performing a T-duality along this ALE, you can realize this theory as suspended deformed brains. So the setup the one now has in mind is the following. You have NS5 brains on a compact X6. With N D4 brains on one side and N D4 brains on the other side. And under this T-duality, the value of this B field is mapped to the angle gamma between the NS5 brains on the circle. So when the NS5 brains are at opposite sides of the circle, you are at the orbifold point, and then this singular point where the B field is going to zero corresponds to the brains colliding, becoming very close on the circle. Now, that's not the end of the world, and so this will really take, I think I should basically really summarize what we think is the right viewpoint. If you go through carefully through the scaling limit that you need to take to obtain the field theory in the infrared of these brains, you discover that that's precisely the same limit that's been discussed by people like Kutasov, Kivion, and collaborators when they discuss so-called double-scale little string theory. And then you realize that these colliding NS5 brains, so you're in start to take a limit in which this string goes to zero with this distance within S5 brain going to zero, and the combination 1 over G string LS over LS fixed, it turns out that this is precisely the coupling constant of the good gauge group, the one that we keep. And in this limit, one gets, in fact, an exact conformal field theory description of the two colliding NS5 brains. So there is an exact CFT description, which is given by SL2 mod U1 coset, level 2. So you can actually generalize the story a little. If you were to consider K NS5 brains on a circle, you'd get SL2 a level K mod U1 times SU2 a level K mod U1 divided by ZK. And it turns out that for K equal to 2, this piece, which is parafermions, is trivial. So this is the sense in which you're actually losing two dimensions. You now have a background, which is this SL2 mod U1 infinite long cigar. The string coupling, the effective string coupling, is finite at the tip of the cigar and is going to infinity in this direction. This circle asymptotically is finite. In fact, it is this free Fermion radius of the circle. It's of string size. So this radius is of string size. And you have this cigar tensored with R5,1. That's the exact description of the two colliding NS5 brains in this limit. And it's a perfectly smooth description. The string coupling can be made as small as you like. And now the challenge, which is the part that we haven't done, of course, is to back-create the geometry by the presence of the deformed brain. It turns out that in these coordinates, you're now going to have N brains localize the tip of the cigar, and other N brains that fill the cigar. And the final guess for what this back reaction must do, if all the pieces of the puzzle are to be combined, is that is the following. So let me draw this again. So the original NS5 brains are extended like this, and then by taking this decoupling limit, I now have a eight-dimensional geometry where I've morally lost two directions, and I have now two types of brain, D3 brains and D5 brains, which this can be shown rather directly. The original D4 brains, I had two types of D4 brains. The one that were going this way, and the one that were going this way. And one can rather directly follow their fate through this decoupling limit. These sort of compact brains are D3 brains localized at the tip of the cigar. And the other non-compact brains are the five brains that wrap the cigar. And geometrically, the U1R symmetry is a rotation in this circle. And whereas a rotation in this circle is a U1 inside the SU2R. And the fact it's an N to SU2 is because it's a stringy size, so you get an SU2 enhancement. So the final guess after the back reaction of the brain is that you are getting a geometry where you have an ADS5 factor and S1 factor of the same size that's forced upon you from the structure of the PS multiplets times a stringy piece of the geometry which has a extra circle chi of string size. Okay, so if this is going to be useful, it's because eventually one will have some kind of exact conformative field description, possibly using pure spin and sigma models or whatnot. But it's already very encouraging that just by making these answers, you can sort of reproduce all the basic qualitative features of the field theory. The fact that you have a large circle matches the Kolodziejczyk spectrum. You can go much further, in fact, and study precisely the spectrum of crossing the cigar background, and you recognize that there are some states which are localized at the tip of the cigar. Those, by Kaluza-Klein reduction, are into one-to-one corresponding with the twisted states, and the untwisted BPS states instead come from the gravity multiplet, if you keep only the lowest harmonic. So the BPS spectrum works, and beyond that, of course, it's still a lot of work to do.
Now, Ilya would say that if you want to study this backtracked geometry, you could do some kind of bubbling type of computation.
I'm sure you can, yes. Basically, you can now take your open your favorite paper n equals to 4 and try to repeat it here. Yeah, I mean, there are many things you can try. And so the main message is that the final, this is what I'm telling you, may be wrong, but the main message is that there's a systematic way to probe these questions, because you have this whole toolbox that was used for n equals 4 weak coupling, and you can use it. Superconformal representation theory is now much better developed than it was even only a few years ago, and you know, spin shape, you know, integrable structures. So we can really, I mean, it's if we cannot understand this theory, which is sort of the next example, then we are really stuck with n equal to 4 and its closed relatives. Another thing that, of course, would be nice to do is to get a better description of the sigma model using, who knows, there are these super coset descriptions of so here's a thought. So there is this, you know, people have described super cosets for n equals to 4, and, you know, there is one way you can get a eight-dimensional geometry very naively if you mod out by something like this. That gives you 8 dimensions with the right symmetry group. Is it right? I have no idea. SU2 times 1 times times SO5 1. Sorry? It better be conformal, yes. It better be conformal. Okay. That's great. Good to know. But wait, I don't know. I know very little about cosets. But perhaps
so
there is...
HS4 non-critical is kind of conformal. It can be a little bit of time.
But this one's not... I don't know HS4, but this... I mean, I think you need the same number of things on both sides of the bar as the PSU.
No. That's what, so no. In this fourth case, the beta function you cancel really the bosons with the fermions. So you really have to compute the full. So it's not that each piece cancels separately, but you really have to compute. It's much harder. But in one case, Polyakov showed that it's conformal. OSP 4/2 is conformal actually.
Well, okay, I don't really know, but if there is some beauty hidden in this theory, then maybe one could have some kind of exhaustive description. I don't know.
Thank you.